passing cloud viewed through an aircraft window.
The reality is that nothing is one-dimensional.
Heathrow, 10th of April, 2019. Voice of Arif Naqvi.
On the 10th of April, 2019, the aircraft I was in, British Airways, landed from Islamabad, Pakistan.
An aircraft touching down.
I'd been doing that flight pretty much every week for the last maybe 6 months. An announcement that I'd heard many times in aircraft before was made on the plane, which was, everybody please remain seated because the police want to come on board. But I didn't give it a second thought. As soon as I got off the plane, on the gangway, there was another gentleman. This one was dressed in a police uniform, and he said, "Sir, I'm placing you under arrest, under an extradition warrant from the United States, and you need to come with us."
Naqvi is also now waiting on a possible extradition to the US in order to face the charges, which include the likes of securities fraud, wire fraud, and conspiracy, according to court documents. And this is a major development in this saga that has been ongoing for some time.
It's not about an explanation, it's not about redemption, it's not about justification or even seeking sympathy.
Arif Naqvi did not grant the BBC an interview for this film.
1 minute I was welcomed by the global elite, my opinion seemingly sought by so many world leaders. The next moment, here I am.
These are his personal videos.
It's a very different Arif from the Arif you folks knew, but it is still somewhere there.
Arif Naqvi had to be an astonishingly clever man. Otherwise, he couldn't remotely have done this.
He was very ambitious, which is what you want. And he wanted to make money, which is what you want.
The biggest private equity group in the Middle East is Abraaj Capital. Chairman and CEO Arif Naqvi.
People were looking at Abraaj as a success, a $14 billion success.
Arif Naqvi sold a dream to the super rich.
The pitch that Arif was making was that he could make investors rich and end poverty.
You're not just there to make money, but you're actually there to achieve good.
And then it all went wrong.
You cannot forget where you put $240 million.
You became suspicious of everything and everyone.
We were starting to text each other and call each other and literally going, what the f-?
So was he driven by good?
The more money he made, the more successful he got, the more he contributed towards the society.
Or by greed.
Potential unauthorized drawings of 300 million plus, I still find substantially astounding.
It was a machine designed to defraud people.
I am crystal clear in front of my maker that I've never committed an intentional act of criminality.
$1 billion downfall. The deal maker. An alpine resort town. Davos. A ski lift rising up from the town, then a helicopter landing. Barry Colson, Mr. Piano Man.
I was the piano player who played the month of January in Davos. This was my 27th World Economic Forum. So I've met a lot of people, many prime ministers, my gosh. There's a lot of things going on in the daytime, discussions, conferences. I don't get to see any of that. The main party was the piano bar. My job is to make them happy, get them drunk, and forget about life. I didn't know who Arif was at first. He'd come back every night, and it was when he slipped a nice big money bill into my hand that I realized, okay, I have to get to know this guy, right? It isn't every day you get a 500 euro tip.
A panel on a stage at the 2010 World Economic Forum.
On my far left, Arif Naqvi, the founder and group CEO of Abraaj Capital in the UAE.
I've been a financial journalist for 22 years. Davos, which is this confluence of capitalists and politicians who in public talk about making the world a better place, and then in closed doors they're often doing deals. Arif was really in his element talking with other money managers and public on stage.
You're an enormous investor.
Because these markets have got liquidity, they've got strength, they're going to make up for lost time.
Arif spoke the language of Western finance, but also understood the realities of countries where people lived on very low incomes.
The vision that drove Abraj to become a global force is harnessing Western-style capitalism to help achieve stability and better health and equality and prosperity in regions that are defined by poverty and volatility.
The pitch that Arif was making was that he could make investors rich and end poverty.
This was impact investing, and I was its flag carrier.
A Davos piano bar at night.
He used to like to sit on the window ledge behind me. He just sat there drinking his scotch, enjoying the music. And I noticed he was wearing a white badge, which means you have access to everything. And obviously you're a CEO or a prime minister or somebody that can afford the, what is it, the $50,000 fee. And as the night progressed, yeah, he would loosen up a bit, of course. And the next thing you know, he's got a microphone singing Hotel California with me. Yeah, I mean, he's human too.
At the piano, Barry Colson nods his appreciation for the applause. Dubai in the 2000s.
I turned up in Dubai with nothing. It was a city that was extremely good to me.
In the 2000s, between 2000 and 2008, you put a dollar in anything, you know tomorrow is $2, but then who makes sure that actually is $6? So Arif was the $6 man.
It was the only environment in the Middle East where you could effectively create a name through entrepreneurship. I set up businesses myself. It was innovative, it was fun, and we were earning money.
Well, I got involved with it because I saw a very talented deal maker. He was very ambitious, which is what you want, and he wanted to make money, which is what you want. He was very clever at flattering people and selling them a great story. Aramex was a transaction he had identified.
Aramex is a courier company, sometimes called the FedEx of the Middle East.
Yes, it was a Middle Eastern company, but it was listed on NASDAQ.
We announced that acquisition very late in 2001. Post 9/11, obviously, we were diligenced to death by all parties. An Arab company buying an Arab company off the stock exchange.
Aramex is bought using a private equity structure.
I mean, look, private equity was fashionable.
A private equity fund ought to conduct itself by taking money from investors, then deploying it into investments, like acquiring a stake in a company, which will be improved to generate returns, and then sharing these profits with investors when the company is sold.
The weakness in private equity is a lack of transparency. You have to have a higher element of trust in the person or the organization. I kept a very close eye on everything. I was overly anxious about his behavior. We had one member of the Saudi royal family who was a shareholder in our firm. Now, the Saudi royal family is a very big family. There are thousands of members. And then I caught him claiming to say that he represents the Saudi royal family. And those sort of things got me very nervous.
Ali and I never got on with each other. I found him to be a volatile keg and a difficult person to work with.
Well, I think I pushed for the divorce because at the end of the day, it was untenable.
Arif and partners create a new private equity firm. They name it Abraj.
We separated from Ali very shortly thereafter, and Abraj was born.
Two skyscrapers.
Abraj's towers. So Burj is one tower, Abraj is towers. The choice of the name was smart. It was very Arabic, although now it's global.
Arif also liked what Abraj meant in Hindi or Urdu. now we rule. Now it's our time to be in charge.
Those years were very, very important years. And the deals, then the big deals started happening.
When Abraj sold its shares in Aramex in 2005, they made something like 5 times their money. That success attracted a lot of attention to Arif and to Abraj.
Headlines: Dubai's Abraj poised to invest $1.5 billion, and Abraj announces $2 billion fund.
He started getting into the message, which was do good and make money, and that became his theme.
A large teeming city at night, its roads choked with traffic. Karachi, 2008. Murtaza Ali Shah.
Karachi is one of the most congested cities on this planet. Around 2008, power outages were a routine. When there is power outage, it means complete misery for very ordinary people. Life would completely come to a grinding halt. Karachi Electric was associated with that darkness. There was violence, there were riots. It was a very, very volatile place.
Arif Bhai is a controlling stake in Pakistan's troubled energy company, Karachi Electric.
Karachi Electric, with all its problems, was an opportunity for Arif and his colleagues to prove that they could bring about a real transformation of a company that would bring tangible, positive benefits to customers and citizens.
Is it doable? Of course it's doable. It was a very good deal. People were jealous.
It was the biggest foreign investment in Pakistan. And over the years, we found that Karachi Electric actually ran far more efficiently than the government was doing. I met Arif off and on in these days. The more money he made sure that people in Pakistan benefited from it.
My mantra of doing good is not just about giving money away. It's about having the direct impact.
He set up this Aman Foundation. And this Aman Foundation did a lot of charitable work in Pakistan. He set up this ambulance service in various parts of the country.
Over the last decade, Aman has probably saved over 1 million lives. I know that for a fact.
A flock of birds rising as one, then a low sun in an amber sky. Cairo, June 2009. A hazy view of minarets, then President Obama waving as he steps off Air Force One.
I've come here to Cairo to seek a new beginning between the United States and Muslims around the world.
In 2009, President Obama went to Cairo to reset the relationship between the United States and the Islamic world, which had been torn apart by the September 11th, 2001 attacks.
Now, we know that military power alone is not going to solve the problems in Afghanistan and Pakistan. That's why we plan to invest $1.5 billion each year over the next 5 years.
After that speech, the U.S. sought out partners in the Middle East with which a government fund could invest. One of the companies which stepped forward was Abraj. The US government pledged $150 million to an Abraj fund to invest in Middle Eastern companies.
Well, the biggest private equity group in the Middle East and North Africa today launched a Palestine investment fund. Here now to talk about that and what's going on with Dubai in the Middle East is Abraj Capital Chairman and CEO Arif Naqvi.
Securing funding from the United States government was a big moment for Abraj and for Arif.
And when you go through all the media hype about Arif at the time, it was all about do good and make money.
How are you going to make this more than just a nice headline?
So I think what it should be lauded as is a new initiative to create opportunity, because when people trade with each other, they forget about violence and negativity.
And Mr. Naqvi, what is the situation?
The Americans saw him as someone who could be an important partner.
These are the big players from the US. He did sit with these guys in forums and meetings and everything else. And I think it drags you. The more you do, the more you want from that.
They were part of the same movement. this belief that investment capital can help end poverty.
A patchwork of farmland near Arif's country estate near Oxford, 2010 to 2012.
5 years ago or so, Arif Naqvi, who was from Karachi, bought this property. He turned this wonderful green behind us into a cricket ground. And then he got in touch with all his old muckers, entertained them lavishly, and set them to play cricket and to make fools of themselves. I'm quite certain this year we've got charities involved, things like that. It's going to be even better.
Well, my name is Henry Blofeld, and I've spent 47 years commentating about cricket for the BBC. A television producer rang me up. He said, now, would you consider commentating for me at a ground near Oxford? There is this extraordinary rich Pakistani called Arif Naqvi. He'd probably pay you quite a lot of money.
That's gone all the way.
Goodness knows how many technicians there were there. And to my astonishment, it was going to be showing nowhere. So, I mean, this was a great demonstration of extravagance.
Here we are, a mutual celebration. The camera can't drink, but Farooq and I can. And Imran Khan comes on to bowl. So this is really the witching hour.
I've known Arif Naqvi for almost 25 years. And I certainly consider him a friend. At the end of my cricketing days, I met him, and he was one of those few staunch cricket lovers.
Arif was very pleased. He was enormously pleased that Imran was dignifying his cricket ground. That will have done Arif Naqvi's street cred hugely good.
Arif as a cricketer was not as good as his business acumen.
And the boss has been run out. Oh dear.
He invited me because he also invited top Pakistani businessmen. After the match, we had a small dinner, a fundraising dinner, and that dinner was to raise money for my political party.
Here were these people with huge amounts of money, and the principal was Arif Naqvi, who had got more money than any of them.
When I look at my life story, and I think with all of that going for you, Arif, and with money that I earned that was way beyond my wildest expectations. And I felt that there must be a purpose to my life other than generating the amounts of money that I did.
London, 2012. Traffic passing in front of an imposing white building. Paul Polman.
Arif Naqvi was a very focused man. When I started running Unilever, you get exposed to hundreds of people, and at that time he was one of them. He was a big advocate for a few things that I think we all believe in and still do. First and foremost, that you need to channel more of our world's capital to the right things, i.e. making this a better world.
This movement of people and institutions which was seeking to channel investment funds in a way that it ended poverty as well as making a profit came to be known as impact investing.
I've been in the impact investing industry all my life. And doing what I love doing, which is investing and actually making a difference.
I work for a London firm named Aureus, which invested in the developing world. We were a boots-on-the-ground model, and that's what many investors, pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, a couple of US foundations loved about the Aureus model.
Abraj bought Aureus. Arif and his colleagues recognized that owning Aureus would open the doors to these Western government funds for Abraj.
Having international investors and a whole bunch of them makes a big difference. Abraj was primarily the Gulf, Middle East, North Africa. We were in Latin America, we were in Sub-Saharan Africa, we were in Asia.
So the Middle East's largest private equity firm, Abraj Capital, continues to expand. The Dubai-based company has bought the UK specialist fund Aureus Capital, which has around $1.3 billion under management. The combined entity will manage $7.5 billion worth of assets, and that's across 30 countries.
For Abraj, the acquisition of Aureus meant that sort of one click of a switch, you had a whole investor base, which could normally take years to actually build up.
I joined the board of the UN Global Compact when Arif Naqvi was on the board. That's probably where I got to know him a little bit better. Did he stand out in one way or another? The world tends to be in monologue between us Westerners. He was an advocate very much so for impact investing for the emerging markets.
The sheer force of development is what will make these markets grow. And it's extremely exciting to be a part of that right now.
Arif became very adept in pitching Abraj as a firm who could gather money from the richer parts of the world and invest in poorer parts of the world in a way that would make a profit and a positive impact as well.
You cannot think of a forum that he or his people weren't there, or you cannot think of a prize that wasn't awarded to them.
When I got to Dubai, the Abraj headquarters, my first impression was it could fit all the Aureus offices in this one office. The whole structure around Arif was almost like a president's office, right? So seniors, as well as a lot of junior people who were very loyal to Arif. One of these individuals was having a haircut and he got a call from Arif. He actually left the hairdressers and went back to the office with half a haircut. When you're asked, jump. They asked how high.
Seattle, 2013 to 2015. Andrew Farnham.
The Gates Foundation believes that all lives have equal value. At the Gates Foundation, I managed the Strategic Investment Fund, designed to partner with for-profit companies and investment funds around the world with the goal of alleviating poverty and ensuring proper healthcare treatment for populations around the globe.
The first time that we know Arif met Bill Gates was when he hosted him at a dinner at his house. He puts on a very grand meeting for Bill and other luminaries.
Bill Gates. it's great. The buzz had skyrocketed itself.
Forbes, the story behind Abraj Group's stunning rise in global private equity.
Bill Gates and Arif Naqvi agreed to do something in healthcare.
Abraj launches a $1 billion fund to invest in healthcare across Africa and South Asia. The Gates Foundation commits $100 million.
It was a very large investment for the foundation and was important to us.
It was probably a very proud moment for Arif to be able to say that, look, we've got this fund going and it's a few years after, you know, discussing this with Bill Gates and so on, and we're there.
2016. London bathed in bright sunshine. Two red double-decker buses passing the Little Ben Clock Tower in the city. Clarissa DeFranco, Managing Director, BII.
I'm from the emerging markets. I've always invested in the emerging markets for the last 25 years. I'm Managing Director and Head of Private Equity Funds at British International Investment, the UK government's development finance institution. The Abraj team, probably the investor relations team, came to us to say, we have this great idea of a fund looking at affordable healthcare. And having Gates there gave us a lot of comfort in terms of, you know, impact will definitely be driving some of that agenda.
Abraj's healthcare fund was made up of heavyweight investors. The Gates Foundation, the UK government's investment arm, as well as the French government equivalent, put in almost $200 million between them. In addition, the US government's Overseas Investment Corporation and the World Bank's private sector development arm committed in total around $250 million. All in all, when combined with other investors, we add $1 billion to make healthcare investments around the world.
Once a year, there'd be a formal investor week where investors across all of their funds would come together. Arif had a very prominent role.
Beyond the human suffering on the ground that affects each and every one of us.
There was always a session around his charity, the Amaun Foundation, and the importance of, you know, why it's not just about making money, that it also needs to ultimately do good. Whenever I saw him speak about that, I felt he really believed that. I mean, he was being genuine with his audience.
The teams would get together from all around the world. The whole point is to mingle and to meet each other. You had music going on in the evenings. There would be pretty lively events.
The firm wasn't one of the largest in the world, but the lifestyle and the character that led it certainly were larger than life.
I remember a specific incident when one of the teams was talking to us about a very aggressive business plan. So I kept kind of, you know, drilling on that. And eventually, you know, it was time for a break. We stepped out and Arif came to me, I recall, and he said, you know, Clarissa, you ask a lot of questions. And I said, yes, I do. That's part of my job. And he said, no, but you're asking too many questions. You know, individuals will be charming and convincing, and individuals will try to be intimidating. That doesn't work. You can try both. Arif tried that on me. That didn't work.
My former colleagues had concerns with the professionalism of the Abraj team and were very interested when I met with them and, you know, finding the nicest restaurant in Seattle and ordering several $100 bottles of wine. That's what they were focused on.
We at Abraj, I in Abraj, we were not bad people. We were never bad people. We wanted to change the world, and we were trying to do that.
Emirates Hills, 2016.
There was one time when I was staying in Dubai. Blair and I were asked for dinner by Arif Naqvi at his house at Emirates Hills. We had an amazing evening. We must have been 30 to dinner at least. I mean, the wine, we didn't drink Chateau Petrus, which he did, produced, I think, at many of his parties. He wanted all the time to impress and go one up, if he could, on all his friends. And I think his house in Emirates Hills was very much a part of his one-upmanship.
Emirates Hills is a place populated by billionaires of the world. In the middle of Emirates Hills, he built a huge mosque, a huge complex, named after his father, Masood Naqvi. That Islamic center means a lot to the local community. You will see billionaires rubbing shoulders with the workers who work in these houses of billionaires.
It was accepted that he had a yacht and that he flew everywhere by private jet. Again, I mean, I thought, well, there's Arif showing that he's a very rich man.
The reality is that the finances of Abraj are in a dangerous state. The firm was most definitely spending more than it was earning.
Arif hires a new chief operating officer.
I joined, I think, on the 26th. Of Jan 2016. As I went into the grinding machine, it was quite interesting, I must say. One of my mandates was to control cost, resize the organization. He used to tell me, listen, my problem is I'm too generous. We have a huge setup. Maybe we can do with less, I don't know. But I need someone who, you know, merciless, you know, like you to, and you know, it's known that I do what needs to be done, okay? We had the highest headcount of investment staff per dollar under management in the world.
The firm has gone into marketing overdrive, and the message that's being put out publicly is one of success, of having a great track record, of being in partnership with Bill Gates and the likes.
When you go to World Economic Forum meetings, we had presence bigger than, you know, can I say Goldman Sachs, for example? You know, bigger than global investment banks. I believe in investing in presence, but it was too excessive.
Abraj HQ, 2016.
A very small group of people, maybe four, five, six, at the heart of Abraj knew the extent of Abraj's problems.
The most important one was the bookkeeper, who's Rafiq.
Abraj's finance department is managed by a man called Rafiq Lakhani. His office was filled with paper receipts. Rafiq was a tireless employee of Arif, extremely loyal. Same for Waqar Siddiqui, who is Arif's brother-in-law and a senior executive. To keep the firm from failing, Rafiq and Arif were moving money around.
Two people who know the most were Waqar and Rafiq.
February 16, an email from Rafiq. We will not have funds in March to meet various day-to-day obligations in the absence of any receipts.
Rafiq, under Arif's guidance, was moving money out of the healthcare fund and then using that to pay for various costs elsewhere in Abraj.
Wakar to Arif, don't see any other inflows. This must be on your mind.
It was a juggling act.
Andrew Farnham.
So the way funds work is the fund manager, in this case Abraj, will say, we're about to make an investment in this hospital network. We need $50 million to make that investment. The money is actually drawn down, as it's called, from the investors slowly over time, little by little over time. What was unique about the Abraj fund is they very quickly said, we need several hundred million dollars.
There was a small drawdown made in September of 2016, but then in December 2016, there was a drawdown for almost $400 million.
So at first we thought that was a good sign. It was an indication that they had done their homework and had a large number of deals that were ready to move quickly. However, after just a few months, we realized that they were drawing down much more money than what they were actually using to invest. Something is wrong here. Something makes no sense.
Rafiq to Arif, the cash situation is out of control and I don't know how to manage.
So when March came, they said, this is the update on the overall portfolio. And we said, okay, well, there's still some money that hasn't been drawn. You should really be using that or giving it back to investors. They said, no, it's going to be utilized in the very short term. And we're actually going to be asking for more money from you tomorrow in the order of $150 million. And we said, well, you have more than that already in cash. Very quickly, you realize that you needed to ask many more questions because the answers weren't fully making sense.
Dubai, March 2017.
I was invited by Arif to do this Art Dubai. We were guests at the Ritz-Carlton. I had a chauffeur with a Mercedes 500 come to pick me up. And the Art Dubai was not far from that famous hotel that looks like a sail.
It was a major event, one of the biggest fixtures of the Dubai social scene.
The whole mood was just very somber. Arif was very quiet. He shook a few hands. He didn't stay long. And for the first time, he did not even come over to say hello to me. Something big is happening. I don't know what it is, but I didn't like it.
There was a lot happening in the background, which later I got to realize the pressure. One, from the healthcare investors, where is the cash? Why are you sitting on so much cash?
So I started emailing and calling the fund managers repeatedly. After several weeks of back and forth, they said, because we trust you, Andrew, and because of our close relationship with the Gates Foundation, this one time, we will tell you where the money is, which bank account it's in. And they sent me a audit statement showing that that $200 million was sitting in the Commercial Bank of Dubai. That interaction got me more and more concerned.
Raj Mojaria.
In September 2017, just organizing the investor meeting for October. You normally have the investors by conference call.
And so on that call, it was a different set of people than I had been interacting with previously when they told me it was in the Commercial Bank of Dubai. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to ask again. Where is the money sitting?
The financial controller gave an answer, a particular bank.
Oh, don't worry about it. It's in Standard Bank.
I remember there was sort of silence for a few seconds. And then on the phone, that's not the information or the bank account I got. And all of a sudden, it was like, what? You know, what's going on?
And at that point, my head exploded. You cannot forget where you put $240 million.
A formal letter was sent, Gates on behalf of the investors from the committee, saying you have until the end of the year to return our capital, to show us a bank statement. The response was not good.
At that point, Arif reached out to everyone who managed the fund's boss within their organizations. This over-the-top explosion trying to get everyone fired, that's an indication that something is very, very wrong.
Asking for a bank statement is not an outrageous request. Abroad and Arif personally appeared to take that as a lack of trust.
And that's when I really knew for the first time that we likely had a case of fraud.
Islamabad, August 2017. Chaotic traffic in the sprawling city. Shahid Haqqan Abbasi, Prime Minister of Pakistan, 2017 to 2018.
The Prime Minister was not a job I aspired to, but it's a big responsibility. So I took office on August 1, 2017 and completed my constitutional term of 10 months. Mr. Arif Naqvi asked to meet me in relation to the issues of K-Electric. I felt that it was very important to him.
A successful sale of Karachi Electric would have brought hundreds of millions of dollars.
He raised the emphasis on the fact that this was critical for Abraj and him.
Arif has lined up a Chinese buyer for Abraj's biggest asset.
He was bringing in Shanghai Electric, which was the premier power utility in the world. It was something that I felt as a prime minister was important for Pakistan. So I was trying to facilitate the transaction to take place. In fact, I asked my military secretary to allow him full access to me and my office.
The deal doesn't move forward.
It was the single largest Chinese investment into Pakistan. So there is a geopolitical situation.
For a huge city's electricity and power to go into the Chinese hands, they say, is not what was liked by the Americans.
And you always find out about these issues about a quarter of a century later when the documents are declassified. A whole host of issues. We resolved many of them, but we could not finalize that transaction. Perhaps Abraj, with the extra money, would have been in a better situation. We can only speculate on that.
A cityscape of skyscrapers beyond a blanket of treetops. New York, September 2017.
In September 2017, Arif traveled to New York. He gives a very big speech about impact investing at a conference which is timed to coincide with the UN General Assembly. So he's in town with the great and the good, world leaders, CEOs, billionaires.
You cannot create a great company unless you start with a good company. And a good company is one that stands for what society stands for.
He was speaking at a time when something seriously wrong was happening at Abraj.
All of us are looking to make a difference, hopefully in the lives of anywhere upwards of 200 to 300 million people. Thank you very much.
This is not the way to end global poverty, by telling investors one thing and citizens one thing and then doing something else.
Seattle's Space Needle Tower, then the Gates Foundation building.
The foundation started receiving whistleblower emails from an email, wbabraj at gmail or whatever it was, which stood for whistleblower Abraj. Basically saying, you're on the right track. You're figuring things out. You and the other investors keep digging.
From wbabraj to Gates Foundation, ask for financials of Abraj. Don't believe what they tell you.
I was told by Dubai HQ that any more interaction with investors is to be dealt with a small group of people, of which I'm not one of them.
And at that point, I went to the management of the Gates Foundation and said, we have a major problem. We need to dig into it. Abraj sent us yet another statement for one day showing that the $200 million was sitting in the account on that day, you know, December 7th or whatever it was, 2017.
You became suspicious of everything and everyone.
We were suspecting that what they were doing is when they needed to show that money was there, they would transfer money in for one day, print out a bank statement, and then transfer it out to use it for other purposes.
Under pressure, Abraj returns unused money to the healthcare fund investors.
At the end of December 2017, the limited partners of the healthcare fund received their monies back.
But the investors still want answers.
In January, they said, we've already given you your money. But by that point, the trust had been broken from our side.
We're going to hire forensic accountants who are going to look at every record of the money coming in and out.
Right. By that point, we had no certainty of where that money had been.
London, January 2018. Will Lauch, reporter, Wall Street Journal, 2016 to 2020.
I wake up mid-January, check my emails as I did every single morning. I had one potentially interesting email from an anonymous address, WB Abraj. So I responded to that. I said, hello, thank you for sharing this information with me. Can you please tell me who you are and why you've shared this with me?
Will was a colleague of mine at the Wall Street Journal at the time. He came over to me one day and told me that he'd received this email. I'd often wondered where Abraj got the money to fund the conspicuous events and lifestyle that its senior executives seemed to lead. But my main feeling initially was not, oh, this must be true or this must be false. My main priority at that time is just to find out, is it true or not?
So they said, for instance, that Abraj had asked investors for $200 million. Which hadn't been spent and had been used to pay salaries instead. If this were true, I mean, this would have been Abraj committing a kind of cardinal sin of fund management.
So the money in private equity is supposed to be managed in a very disciplined way. If you raise a healthcare fund, you can't, you know, go and throw a party with that money or pay someone's salary or bonus. I mean, this is where trust is won or lost in finance. So we started to gather pieces of information, off-the-record comments. Documents followed. We kept calling people, calling them back, calling Abraj.
How am I ever going to confirm, without getting bank statements and investor reports, which are very difficult to get because they're confidential?
While we're doing the reporting, trying to verify the information in the anonymous email, Arif is in Davos.
I knew that someone was briefing against us in the press, and that was a coordinated exercise, but I had no idea who or what.
Arif had arranged a meeting with two very senior executives at News Corp. He tried really hard to get them to kill our story.
And he actually participates in a panel discussion with Bill Gates about global health.
Like Bill, I'm an optimist. Then I have to say that, you know, Bill was instrumental, that Bill is so focused. So, you know, probably as Bill will testify.
Arif repeatedly tries to engage Bill Gates in conversation. It's apparent that Bill Gates is trying quite hard to not be engaged by Arif in conversation.
Can I just add something slightly provocative there, Bill? And I don't know, maybe I'm being a bit simplistic, but, you know, these gold standard regulators and the drugs that are approved...
And even for Arif to appear, like if you're a fund manager and you're on an investigation, to be able to get up on stage and then lecture one of the world's richest men really takes, like, a lot of... not quite sure what confidence, maybe courage.
We called Abraj for comment. A senior executive said it's not true that hundreds of millions of dollars are missing. Abraj is regulated in seven jurisdictions. It has highest governance standards. At that point, we knew investors were investigating. So we published the article on February the 2nd, 2018.
In the Wall Street Journal, the headline, Abraj Investors Hire Auditor to Trace Money. And in the New York Times, investors say a manager of $14 billion misused funds.
When the two infamous articles came out, I got a call from Waqar saying, oh, Bashir, you know, there are two American, quote-unquote, publications. They're after us. Those bloody racist newspapers, they want to nail our successes. And then it was like an avalanche.
An article headlined, Top Private Equity Firm Accused of Misusing Funds.
After the articles came out, we were starting to text each other and call each other and literally going, what the fuck? I mean, what is going on? This just shouldn't happen in our business.
Drawing down and sitting on the money for a while, fine, you could live with it. But using it for another purpose, that's not okay. Yeah, and this is exactly what I told Arif, I remember. This is called a serious violation, which needs a major change. Because what do you mean? some heads have to roll, including potentially yours.
On the 23rd of February, Arif Naqvi steps back from Abraj's fund management.
He kept on climbing down the stairs, snooping around, you know, all of us, trying to figure out what's going on. I built a wall to block the staircase. Gypsum wall, you bring a gypsum, not me physically.
I was constantly reaching out to Abraj's spokesperson and senior executives and to Arif.
Everything that I said was being ignored. I sent letters and responses in writing. I sent them verbally.
Will and I had a phone call with Arif.
We spoke for hours. I can't remember exactly how long.
The answers he gave to the questions we asked were not sufficient to make us say, OK, well, there's nothing to see here.
Simon and I just... It's like, what did we literally got nothing out of that. He just spoke in kind of very abstract language. We thought that if we could meet him in person, then maybe, you know, you'd have a bit more engagement.
He initially was talking about, yes, he would meet me to talk things through, but that meeting never happened.
I only stopped when I realised that it didn't really matter. It continued to be a one-sided narrative.
As you can imagine, a lot of the time in the office was spent discussing what was really going on. So I guess I first got really immersed in the Abraj data back in early 2018 on behalf of the Dubai Financial Services Authority, the local Dubai regulator.
The Dubai regulator has asked to see internal Abraj data.
The data for the regulator is still downloading the mailboxes, and this partner appears in my office. It felt like he was shouting blue murder, saying, "You must stop now. Stop what you're doing now. Arif doesn't want anybody else to see his information."
Evidence suggests multiple funds have seen money moved inappropriately.
Then the news on Fund 4 comes out. That, again, investors are asking, where is the money, where is the money? The money was not there. So guys, I said, what is this?
Accounts also show large sums of money going to Arif.
The potential unauthorized drawings of 300 million plus to Arif-controlled vehicles, I still find substantially astounding.
So I'm an auditor by training. I remember literally my jaw dropped when the guys showed me the download from Arif's ledger. It's not only of the quantum of money that was withdrawn, but also from the level of details. From a shoe shine of 20 dirhams all the way to, you know, the transfers to him or his companies of tens of millions of dollars.
I have never stolen money from anyone.
Arif Naqvi's contract entitles him to receive huge sums from the company in various ways.
Transfers would be made to the same vehicle controlled by Arif, a company called Silver Line Holdings, sometimes frequently in the same week. Money was being taken in and used for these corporate expenses and for personal gain when it was so tight, right? So tight. And investor money couldn't be given back or investments couldn't be made. That's fundamentally what I still find, I guess, the most shocking about the Abraj story.
Records indicate loans concealed Abraj's financial problems.
There was a hole to be filled of around $200 million.
The money that plugged the hole for the healthcare fund came from Air Arabia.
Arif was on the board of that company as well. An arrangement was struck with Air Arabia to place a short-term deposit with Abraj. 200 million was taken in.
And our audited report said we had the money.
It was then transferred directly from the fund bank account back to Air Arabia.
In accounting and auditing standards, this is what we call typically window dressing, right? You dress the window for a certain occasion and then you strip it down. And I met with the auditors. And they are KPMG, just, you know, to make things clear. I told them, in my book, or in anyone's book, this is gross negligence. It was a machine designed to defraud people.
Who designed that machine?
Who do you think? I mean...
He borrowed money from airlines, banks, people. One of the lenders, they said, we want our money back.
So Arif's yacht is put up for sale, various properties he owns. Creditors wanted to be repaid. Abraj couldn't repay them, so that's what triggered Abraj having to file for a provisional liquidation.
We'd grown fast, yeah, but we were destroyed even faster. Anonymous emails, negative news articles, they forced us into a civil liquidation process. The only thing you have in a business, in the world of finance, is your reputation. When that's gone, nothing else can really survive.
Abraj is the largest ever private equity collapse. The company denies any wrongdoing.
The corporate response was nothing to see here, no involvement or fraud from either Arif or wider Abraj perspective.
Simon Clark, walking beside the Thames.
I'm spending most of my time on this story. What has happened here is not public.
No one ever found out who sent those anonymous emails. So we were looking for sources that could verify what the emails said. Simon found a new source who might have bank statements.
And I've probably reviewed 80-85% of the records that exist for thousands of hours. Immersed in looking at the data and finding new things, what felt daily, I was very fearful of speaking to anybody in the media.
M Hotel, London, August 2018. Giles Montgomery Swan meets with Simon Clark.
I remember literally trembling.
The atmosphere was very tense because there was a lot at stake.
You had to put in quite a lot of work for the first half an hour to calm me down. I remember you consistently asking me, can I have a copy of that? Can I have a copy of that?
There'd been lots of rumour and hearsay, but that's one thing, but actually seeing the evidence is something else altogether.
I wouldn't say that I slept properly again for a good year or two.
All this information went into the investigative feature.
The headline, private equity firm Abraj raised billions pledging to do good. Then it fell apart.
That meeting that Simon had with his source was crucial. I think that really elevates the story from being a badly run company to someone taking lots of money that you're not necessarily entitled to.
Yes, private equity can help solve some of humanity's biggest problems, but in the Abraj story, I was presented with a lot of evidence that it wasn't solving problems, it was making problems.
London, April 2019. Early morning sunlight catching glass skyscrapers and commuters crossing a bridge on foot.
We'd written the story in October 2018 and nothing had happened.
We're hearing various rumours about Arif being in Pakistan, meeting with Imran Khan.
I was a prime minister then. I began to realise that there were some problems taking place. And I, of course, heard about these problems from Arif's point of view.
Is this how finance works? Like someone can basically just allegedly take a lot of money and then nothing happens to them?
We didn't know that the US Department of Justice was preparing to pounce.
We got the shock of our lives when we found that he had been arrested at Heathrow.
I was shocked with the US response.
Following coverage of financial mismanagement at Abraj, the US Department of Justice announces criminal proceedings. Arif and five Abraj executives are charged with fraud and racketeering. After 6 weeks in Wandsworth prison, Arif appears for a bail hearing.
The charges add up to 291 years in jail. The US government did not want him to be granted bail. His initial requests were rejected until he offered £15 million, which at the time was the highest bail bond ever requested and granted.
With the benefit of hindsight, one always has 20/20 vision, right? Would you do some things differently? Of course you would. Would you have different people around you? Of course you would. But to be told that I masterminded a criminal conspiracy and enterprise, that's just wrong. And I categorically claim my innocence from those charges.
Arif is now under house arrest and fighting extradition to the US.
I think criminal intent is the most difficult thing to prove in a court of law. I'm still hoping, as I say, that Arif has a last deal in him. He's a deal maker, and I hope he does it.
Since lawyers want to keep the whole truth part for a legal podium, but it'll certainly come out, and certainly come out over time. At this moment in time, where I find myself is that fear is feeding the anger. Now my anger sits with me. My fear sits with me. It sits on my sofa, my bedroom, my ankle bracelet. It's a constant reminder that I'm facing the extradition.
Two of the co-accused have pleaded guilty to reduced charges. The other three have not yet responded to the indictment. The BBC has not been able to reach them for comment.
We can talk about Arif Naqvi as long as we want. Hopefully he'll get whatever he deserves to get. But it wasn't him alone.
His board of directors.
You know, where the fuck were you? You know, because ultimately, I mean, I'm surprised they haven't been sued. I would sue them if I'd lost money.
Without the enabling elements that surrounded him, it wouldn't have been possible.
Abraj's auditors, KPMG LLP, have been fined $2 million by the Dubai regulator, and they are being sued for $600 million by the liquidators. KPMG Lower Gulf says the DFSA found Abraj and Abraj senior management intentionally misled KPMG and other third parties. KPMG has made significant investment to provide excellent service to our clients in the region. The firm is committed to a process of continuous improvement. Liquidator Deloitte has so far charged $120 million in fees. The indictment says Abraj creditors have losses of more than $1 billion.
I'm one of those creditors. I almost say like I'm proud. I'm one of those creditors. Isn't that cool?
After Abraj fell, investment to emerging markets shrank by two-thirds.
The real tragedy of what happened in Abraj is that hundreds of millions of dollars that would have otherwise gone to building healthcare facilities that could have a huge impact on the world were lost or wasted on lawyers unraveling the mess of Abraj.
When CEOs are building something, they can be very public about what they're going to achieve. When things collapse, the truth disappears unless journalists dig it out. Financial firms usually are just in the business of saying they'll make investors rich. Abraj was in the business of saying it could make investors rich and help end poverty. But the bigger the promise, the more responsibility they're taking on.
I know what I've done in my life, but more importantly, I know what I've not done in my life. And I am crystal clear in front of my maker that I have never committed an intentional act of criminality, nor was I aware of any actions that could have been perceived as such.
Arif Naqvi's lawyers told the BBC, Mr. Naqvi strenuously denies all the allegations. He would welcome any trial of these issues before the courts in the UK.
If you permit me, this is emotional. Thank you.